How aware are you?
You're probably aware that mammograms are a great way to detect breast cancer.
And that regular, moderate walking can be good for heart health.
But are you aware that the fifth most common cancer in the United States is uterine cancer?
And that the average age at diagnosis is 60?
Well, I definitely wasn't when I was diagnosed with endometrial cancer at the age of 32.
And that's exactly what inspired this podcast.
We are Mary and Alex, a mother-daughter duo engaged in multi-generational dialogue surrounding subjects related to gynecologic cancer, women's healthcare, and various other topics that impact our daily lives.
We are
Down There
Aware.
Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. If you follow us on social media, Down There Aware, on all of our platforms, you would have seen that recently on World Cancer Day, Friday, February 4th, we hosted a virtual screening of the Conquering Cancer Campaign documentary. We sold tickets on our website, which, by the way, are still available because you can watch this at your own convenience. And every penny of the $5 ticket that you buy goes directly to this amazing, very worthy cause. And you'll hear all about it because today's episode, we are so fortunate that we got to sit down with a filmmaker, a scientist, and a cancer survivor who are coming together to eliminate cervical cancer. It's an incredible project, and we are so very fortunate that the Conquering Cancer Campaign reached out to us. They found our podcast, they knew what we were up to, and they wanted to get connected and get us involved, and we are so excited that they did. So here's our interview. We jump right in, and as always, you know, interviewing, especially we were interviewing people in Australia. So the audio is a little scratchy sometimes because of the distance and Zoom and all of that stuff. But forgive us, the content is really golden. And you will not want to miss this episode.
Sure. I'm Sue Collins. I'm a producer and presenter on the Conquering Cancer Campaign. And I'm a filmmaker and I've been producing public health films for about 15 years now.
Wow, that's wonderful. And then Marion.
Hi, I'm Marion Saville. I am the executive director of the Australian Centre for Prevention of Cervical Cancer. And I have been in the role for over 20 years. My background is I'm a pathologist that specialised in reading pap smears, but what's become apparent to me is that that's not the right technology anymore. So we've moved on, and my work now is entirely around preventing cervical cancer using the best available technology.
And Kirsty.
Hi, I'm Kirsty Brown. I was diagnosed with cervical cancer at 26, so very young. I'm now 6 years out and doing well due to a lot of the efforts and public health programs currently available in Australia. And I absolutely am excited to get a conversation going to make sure that other women are as lucky as me.
So the Conquering Cancer Campaign is a global initiative to celebrate the efforts being made around the world to eliminate cervical cancer. And so we've created a film, and it's got a lot of different short films as well. We've tried to make it as accessible as possible. And the film really looks at, you know, what is cervical cancer? How can you prevent cervical cancer? What can be done around the world? How can countries that don't currently have programs to eliminate cervical cancer, what can they do? And how can people get involved and, you know, be part of the solution to cervical cancer?
That's awesome.
All right. If you could help us talk to our listeners a little bit about what each of your specific roles are in this campaign, and just as importantly, what prompted you to get involved?
I'll start. I was prompted to get involved when Mike approached me to talk about
about this campaign. And the opportunity I saw is that, you know, we've got the tools to prevent this cancer globally. We've got the technology. The challenge is the political will and commitment to resource it. Not so much in Australia, where our governments have been very good, but in communities around the world. And so you can put all the evidence, including effectiveness and cost effectiveness, in front of people, but you need to complement that with advocacy and storytelling. So I saw this as a tremendous opportunity to reach decision makers around the world, really. And my role has been participating in making the film, and also I think lining up some of the resourcing support and putting the filmmakers in touch with the with some of the people that have supported the making of the film.
So my role is as a producer and on this film, presenting the film as well. And I see my role as an enabler of the storytelling. So it's really putting together the stories and sharing other people's stories and, you know, enabling those communications to go out into the world. And, you know, that's Kirsty. She's had an incredible story. She generously shared with the project, and Marion was absolutely instrumental in helping this project get off the ground. So Marion, I can't thank you enough for the, you know, the ground support that you really gave to the project, as well as contributing your, you know, your time and your own stories as well. So so yeah, as a filmmaker, I think my role really is just enabling that storytelling to happen.
That's awesome.
And Kirsty, how did you get involved?
I actually cannot remember specifically, but my role, ever since, being diagnosed and treated for, cervical cancer and treated for a gynecological cancer at a young age, has been to start a conversation. So this was a fantastic way to bring the every girl, woman, child, sister, auntie, grandma into it and make it not just about, you know, not just a concept, to actually think about people that you know. I became the case study to bring it to life. And I think that it makes it so much easier to sort of get motivated and engaged and start a conversation when you can actually see somebody who has both benefited from a system but is encouraging development and continuation and championing of all those initiatives that helped me avoid a worse prognosis. But let's work towards, you know, this amazing goal of potentially eliminating a cancer if we can really get that conversation going and really get those initiatives sort of publicly out there. So for me, my role as the case study is making it personable, making it relatable. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's always really important to do that. So I've happily been involved in anything like that. And I think I was approached by Sue and Cancer Council Australia or Cancer Council Victoria. And I'm absolutely happy to share my story and shout it from the rooftops if that means that people go and get tested and we can work towards our goal of elimination.
That's so impactful. And, you know, we've seen the film and a lot of our listeners have seen the film. But could you explain to some of our listeners who may not be familiar with the film what the elimination plan is? What specific goals have been set by the WHO and by Australian authorities to eliminate this cancer?
I can take that one if you like. So the WHO has called for elimination of cervical cancer as a public health problem. And elimination is not the same as eradication. When you eradicate something, you can stop your preventative efforts. Elimination is not necessarily to zero. So we think we can bring incidence rates down, and the target that has been set is 4 per 100,000. And we will need to continue those prevention efforts even once we get there. So it's not a get this done and then forget it situation. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal. And the goal is to achieve that globally by the end of the century. Mm-hmm. Australia is in the fortunate position, modelling is suggesting we will get there by 2035, maybe a little earlier.
Wow. That's incredible.
So encouraging. Mm-hmm.
And what are the three steps we're working toward? We're working to vaccinate as many children as possible and young women and men as possible. And then is that the next step?
Or testing
for women at 35 and at 45. And then, treat those women who do end up with an infection or with cervical cancer. So with the treatments, the screenings, one thing that really amazed me was that moving from a traditional pap smear into an at-home vaginal swab.
And wow.
That just seems so much more accessible. And I had not heard of that in the States. And so is that something that is being more produced worldwide, or how's that moving forward?
So, what's happening is we're moving to a self-collected vaginal swab, and the setting in which that happens will vary from country to country. So here in Australia, we think that one of the strengths of our cervical screening program has been that it's embedded within primary care. So that's where we've always had pap smears undertaken and cervical screening undertaken. In our context, handing a swab across the consultation desk and allowing the patient privacy to collect then and there is probably recommended, because we by far have higher uptake rates. It's unusual for a patient to then leave without collecting the sample. Mm. In the context of the pandemic in our laboratory, we've developed a model of at-home self-collection, but that's in conjunction with a telehealth consultation with your primary care physician. So we're trying to keep that very strong link between primary care and screening. We are aware of studies around the world, and we did one of our own in 2014 when we mailed the swabs to the screening participants at home. And you get back fewer than half if you need to do that. And so for me, continuing to embed that in primary care for the vast majority of people who do access primary care, whether that's a traditional GP or a community health service or an Aboriginal community controlled service, those are the places where I think we'll get the best participation. But having said that, we want to be flexible in how we allow this to roll out. So providing there's a healthcare practitioner facilitating the test, from the 1st of July in Australia, practitioners and importantly, the practitioners should be offering the choice, and screening participants should be able to choose between a traditionally collected sample, and some will want that, they'll be used to it, and a self-collected sample. We'll do that in primary care, but we want the practitioners to have maximum flexibility for how they meet the needs of their communities. So in very remote communities, there might be an outreach, such as we've done in East Malaysia in the ROSE program, in some of our research in Papua New Guinea, and in parts of Australia and Central Australia up in the Kimberley, there's self-collection going on in those parts as well. But I think you've inadvertently touched on a really important discussion, which is self-collection is great, but people generally assume it's in the setting that they're used to. And I think we need to be really flexible about the setting and be guided by communities and their health professionals about what works for them in relation to the setting.
Absolutely.
That is a lot to think about. And especially getting back fewer than 50%.
Yeah.
That's disconcerting.
If you send something through the mail and it has a government logo on it, that's how most bowel screen programs work. It's tough to get it. But we know from qualitative research that the single biggest reason people participate in screening is a recommendation from their trusted healthcare provider.
Right.
And it just happens to be how we've run our PAP program. So we haven't seen a reason to move away from it. I am aware there are some trials in BC of self-collection underway at the moment through the BC Cancer Agency. So every locality has to work out what works for them.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not sure in the States if an at-home test that was sent out, if that would be, you know, not sure. So it, like you said, it's good to rely on the communities and what they're used to and what they're familiar with, because the best thing is that they're doing it and that it doesn't matter where they are, right? Just getting those swabs done and making sure that they're being tested for that.
And then the other thing is that there's been thought in advance of screening about how follow-up will happen for those who screen positive. That's really critical, because you talked about the treatment targets. There are also treatment targets in the WHO initiative for those who have pre-cancer as well as those who have cancer. Unless we treat the pre-cancer, there's no point in screening.
Right. Wow. Okay. That's a lot to digest.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to work through that. But Kirsty, let me ask you, after having gone through your diagnosis and treatment and those experiences that surrounded those, is there one thing in particular that you might say to parents regarding their young children?
I actually think that vaccination is something that really needs to be talked about. I know that vaccination is something that is very topical right now. And I think that the COVID pandemic has helped in a lot of ways to bring the vaccination conversation to the table again. And this is where I think a lot of people are not necessarily aware of the benefits of vaccination in cervical cancer, and also the benefits of vaccination in a timely or in an early early in a person's life. So I think that vaccination against cervical cancer for HPV should be seen as an absolute gift to your child. You are giving your child a gift and saying, this is one less thing for you to worry about. Imagine if you could take a yucky part of your life and remove it from your child's future, you know, potentially. Obviously, it's not a foolproof method, but, you know, it's incredibly, incredibly effective for preventing the majority of the high-risk strains. So for me, if I could have rewound the clock and somebody said, would you like to skip that whole awful bit, why wouldn't you do that? So I think there's a lot of connotations wrapped up in the concept of a vaccine for something that is technically sexually transmitted. But what I would say to parents is it's a gift to your child, and that sex is part of life. We're all here. It could be a one-time with the partner that you love. So I know that there's sort of connotations around sex wrapped up with the vaccination. And I think that it's time that everybody get real and really have a chat about it and say, you know, what am I thinking, you know, and this is something that you can give to your child to prevent them having to worry about that in the future. I think this concept that your little girl, your 12, 13-year-old, isn't going to have sex is silly. She most likely is. I hope she is. I hope that she finds a partner or a couple of loves in her life. And the likelihood of your child engaging in sexual activity is almost 100%. So let's get real. Let's have a conversation, and let's not let a bit of discomfort around sex mean that your child might have to go through cancer later in life. I think we've swept it under the rug for a long time. Let's talk about it. HPV is transmitted through sex. People have sex. Vaccinate your child before they have sex. It's pretty simple.
I think that's a great perspective to say that it's a gift you're giving to your child. You know, as parents, there's no predictability about our children and their lives and what paths their lives will take. And so if you have this assurance that there's a good chance it's going to keep their child from having to deal with this horrible disease, then why not? I do think it's a cultural thing. And I think you're right. Get real. We need to have the discussions, get it out there. And that's why we are contacting many of, well, Alex's contemporaries, but my contemporaries who are grandmothers, to speak with their tweens and teens about this documentary and about vaccines in particular. So that's a great way to look at it. It's a gift to your children.
No worries. I think it's, and this goes the same for birth control. All those young teenagers on birth control just for acne, of course. Oh, come on, dads, get real. Get real. Sex is a part of life. And I know there's a whole lot of cultural and religious connotation wrapped up, but let's be honest and let's have real conversations around risks and gifts for happy lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. So how does or does eliminating cervical cancer, not eradicating, but eliminating cervical cancer, aid in the future of eliminating other cancers? Is that something that is on the horizon?
I think there's a real opportunity here, and it's in particular in countries that don't have good universal health coverage. The very act of getting ready to prevent, manage and treat cervix cancer from the vaccination end all the way through to the treatment and palliative care is going to mean that some countries that have no services get services for cervical cancer, which then provides capability in those countries for other cancers. So, for example, in the Western Pacific, we're looking at the need for surgical services and radiotherapy. Well, you wouldn't put in a radiotherapy unit in Papua New Guinea just for cervix cancer. It would be used for other cancers. So I think it opens the door. I think it provides a great deal of focus, this one cancer, when we can really make a difference. But it would be my hope that the elimination of cervical cancer leads to reaching targets around universal health coverage, particularly in low and middle income countries around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it certainly gives hope for eliminating and even just treatment of other cancers, just the research that goes into it, the data that's collected, it offers hope. And, you know, we all need that.
100%.
It just inspires people to think about how could they apply that to something else? You know, what are the possibilities? So I think it's that, you know, that global health moonshot. So it's really exciting in that way.
It is. Yeah. And Sue, with your background in, you know, healthcare films and the, you know, the other work you've done, how did you get connected and what made you, you know, what inspired you to get involved with this project in particular?
I think I got very interested in this particular topic because it is the possibility to eliminate a cancer, and that is just such an incredible concept. And so having worked on, you know, global health projects for a number of years, there's such a disparity of health. You know, health equity is such an enormous issue. And living in Australia in a very robust health system that we have here and the experiences that I personally have, and then overlaying that on what I was seeing happening with women in other parts of the world, and realizing that it really provided an opportunity to progress the elimination of cervical cancer, and also on an individual level, you know, which is very much what Kirsty talks about, is just if every woman just goes and gets their screening in time and has access to get a screening, and if they get their children vaccinated, the difference that can make is extraordinary. And so being able to be producing a film that could help move, you know, a lot of people in that direction is a really exciting thing.
Well, the documentary is just beautifully made.
We've watched it multiple times.
We just keep watching it, and we keep, encouraging others to watch it. It is cram packed with good information, and it's told, Kirsty, as you were saying, when people are allowed to tell their stories, you can relate and you understand that it could be you, and it helps you to stop and listen. So I just thank all of you for your participation in it. We are just thrilled to be able to get the word out. Like I said, chocked full of really good information, and we need to be sure that gets spread around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, speaking of that, what do we want
to? So, just to close, what can the average person do to get involved or to assist your mission to eliminate cervical cancer globally? And just so you know, most of our audience is in the States, but we do have audience members from across the globe. So, several different countries are represented in our listenership.
If people can see the film, that would be brilliant. They can host an event for the film themselves. And the easiest way to do that is just to head over to conqueringcancercampaign.com. And that's the website. And it's also the same for the social media. So you can get in touch in that way. So just head to conqueringcancercampaign.com and you'll find all the information you need to either host your own screening or find out how you can actually serve.
That's amazing. And we'll have all of this information in our show notes and on our social media. You know, when we post this episode, we'll definitely include all of the links to the website and your social media, because getting the word out is crucial. It's vitally important. And we're so excited to be able to speak with you today and to have seen the film, and really appreciate all of the work that you all are putting into this. How incredible.
Thanks very much for your interest.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
We hope you enjoyed this brief interview with Sue, Kirsty, and Marion. It was really a wonderful experience. Concrete Cancer Campaign reached out to us, as you know, and we hosted a virtual screening, which so many of our listeners purchased tickets, which all of the proceeds go to the Concrete Cancer Campaign to view that on their own. And we are just so excited to be a part of this wonderful, wonderful project. If you would like to learn more about the Conquering Cancer Campaign, just like Sue said, head over to their website. It's www.conqueringcancercampaign.com. And we will have all of these links on our website if you forget, or if you're driving and you can't write it down. All of our social media, Down There Aware, on Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook, all of the places, and our website, downthereaware.com. We have everything listed in our show notes that you can find for this episode. Thank you again to the Conquering Cancer Campaign. Thank you to Sue. Thank you to Kirsty. And thank you for Marion for taking time with us. Being so far apart, it was really a fun kind of challenge to get together. Mom and I were, it was about 7 p.m. our time. And I think everybody else, it was the next day around 10 or 11 a.m. So wonderful that they took their time to continue their mission and share with us and speak with us and all of our listeners. Don't forget, we are recording on a new schedule. So we release episodes on the second and fourth Monday of every month. So hit subscribe, you'll get notifications, and that will help you remember when those new episodes of Down There Aware post. Thank you so much to all of our listeners. We really appreciate all of you. It really helps us out every single time you like and subscribe and review the podcast on whichever platform you're listening on. That helps us get the word out. And we want everyone to know about wonderful, wonderful projects like the Conquering Cancer Campaign. So help us out, share this episode, and we will be back in a couple weeks for our next episode. Thanks for listening.